Joining me in the studio before we get started with the team members is one of the coaches, Stephanie Ask, who is going to explain a little bit about what public forum debate is. So, Stephanie, let's just jump right into it. What is a public forum debate? We hear the term a lot. Let's put a definition to it.
Well, I'll do my best. I don't know how great of a definition it will be. But at the competitive level, there are several different types of debate. There's Lincoln-Douglas debate. There's policy debate. Public forum debate is a debate style that's really intended to approach kind of large issues, research them, prepare to debate each other, and really present your arguments and your side of the debate in a way that is easy to understand and digestible to a general kind of public audience. So you do not have to be an expert as a judge or as someone watching the debate to really understand what it is that they're talking about, because they're really taking that information and giving it to you in a way that should be, you know, easy to understand.
In fact, for the judges, it might even be better not to be an expert, because part of their responsibility is to set aside their opinions and,
right,
and judge on the merits of an argument.
Exactly. Yeah, that is one thing we always want to warn our judges of kind of before they go into a round to judge, is that when you're listening to a public forum debate, it's not about, you know, bringing in everything that you know about the topic, but rather kind of putting that to the side and really listening to the arguments and reasoning that each side provides and the rebuttals against each other's opinions, even though they're, you know, they're prepared on either side of the debate. But it feels like their opinions when you're listening to them give it. And just make that judgment based on the merit of what's actually said.
The topics, as I understand it, change from meet to meet?
They do. Every month, the National Forensics League selects a different public forum debate topic. So it shifts per month, which for us, because we have one meet per month, typically means that we debate a different topic every single month.
That's a lot of preparation.
It is a lot of preparation. Yeah, the kids do incredible research and analysis, and they write their initial speech plans, and they practice against each other all on this one topic. They go to a meet and debate it, and then they get a new topic for the next meet. So they really are kind of developing those research skills. And
what topic are we going to hear about tonight?
The resolution for the month of February is, on balance, the rise of China is beneficial to the interests of the United States.
And that's phrased with certainty. It's not a question. It's a statement that you have to prove or disprove.
Correct. So you'll hear one side tonight is on the affirmative side. That means that it is their responsibility to prove that resolution to be true. And then the negative side, their kind of duty is to prove it not true in some way.
Real quickly, before we introduce the competitors, let's talk about the format of the debate. We're going to hear a constructive argument from each side. Then they get the chance to crossfire at each other.
Yes.
They make a second constructive argument, another crossfire where they're asking each other questions.
Right.
There's a summary speech. And then I love this term, the grand crossfire.
Yes.
What is that?
The grand crossfire is the final kind of questioning period that we get. But instead of it just being two debaters against each other, it's all four of them. So both teams they're each getting to talk, to question each other, to kind of take turns and respond to each other.
And then the final focus, which is kind of the closing.
Right. Boil it all down into some beautiful, powerful conclusion that makes it impossible to lose, hopefully.
There are time limits on each of those phases, and another DDF coach, Cassidy Patineau, is in the studio acting as timer. Eve Arp is the third coach of the DDF team.
Yes.
At Sitka High. We have judging tonight. John Stein, Sarah Bell, and Robert Woolsey, they'll be listening to the debate. And we also have some spectators here watching and enjoying down here at the Cable House. So without further ado, on one team we have Kaya Pike and Ryan Apathy. And are you arguing the affirmative or the negative, this team here?
The affirmative.
Okay. And so on the negative side of the argument, Celia Lubin and Anne-Marie Pike. And we'll be getting to them very shortly. And in just a moment. So the first thing up, we will hear the first constructive argument from each side. And if the timer is ready and he's nodding, we will begin with the first constructive arguments, beginning with the affirmative.
Are judges and timer ready? All right. Hello, my name is Ryan Apathy, and throughout today's debate, my partner, Kaya Pike, and I will be debating the affirmative of the resolution, on balance, the rise of China is beneficial to the interests of the United States. We will provide you with 3 points that will prove this benefit. First, we will show that the rise of China will benefit the American economy. Second, growth promotes safer and healthier business practices across the globe. And finally, a developing China will promote American ideals. Firstly, as China strengthens its footing in the global economy, U.S.-China economic relations will improve. The Department of Commerce reports that the United States imported $400 billion worth of goods from China in 2011, up from $100 billion in just 10 years. Over that same period of time, U.S. exports to China increased by over $84 billion, making China our third largest export destination and growing twice the rate of any other country. As China develops, our import-export trade relationship will continue to grow with a number of government initiatives that exist to secure our economic and strategic future. Furthermore, China's investment in American business, both in this country as well as overseas, has and will continue to have undeniable benefits for our economy. According to the Heritage Foundation's China Global Investment Tracker, China has invested over $11 billion in American companies and created over 10,000 U.S. jobs in the last 2 years alone. Moving on to my second point, the growth of China benefits the global commercial environment. China has already shown initiative to become a more beneficial member of the global commerce, specifically by improving their health, food, product safety, and environmental standards. As the presence of American business in China grows, so does their influence. U.S. companies' experience with America's effective safety laws and standards present new business ideals, bringing about higher expectations for Chinese companies. Public pressure has led to the development of policies that drive energy efficiency, renewable energy development, and climate change adaptation, funded by a large-scale government investments that focus on low-carbon development, according to a 2012 report by the Climate Policy Initiative. Already, China is one of the forerunners of low-carbon technology development. The Consumer Product Safety Commission also reports that new regulations and requirements in China have led to a rapid decline of product recalls since 2008. All of these increases in standards yield undeniably beneficial results to U.S. interests, and they can all be attributed to the rise of China. Finally, the stabilization of China as a result of its growth encourages democracy. The rapid expansion of the Chinese middle class is contributing greatly to driving this process. Currently in the 300 millions, the number of those in this social class are expected to top 1.4 billion as early as 2030, leading to a number of beneficial things. First, in just 20 years, the amount of people living in the cities of China has doubled, contributing greatly to economic growth. As a result of higher education standards, illiteracy rates have reached record lows. Over the past few years, more and more members of this rapidly growing middle class have taken to the streets in protest to demand a higher quality of life, claiming that freedom, equality, and human rights are universal values of humankind and that democracy and constitutional government is the fundamental framework for protecting these values. The Wuhan protest shows that the application of this framework. In an effort to scale back demonstrators, government leaders sent representatives to hear the protesters' complaints, even allowing the villagers to hold special elections to appoint protest leaders as party chiefs, an undeniably democratic political action. It is in America's national philosophy to promote democracy. The rise of China, and therefore the rise of democracy, is in our best interest. For this reason, coupled with both the increase in standards and the increase of the Chinese economy, the benefits to the United States are undeniable. Thank you.
That was the first constructive argument from the affirmative side. Next is the first constructive from the negative side.
Judge and timer ready? Good evening. My name is Celia Lubin, and today my partner Anne-Marie Pike and I stand in firm negation of the resolve that, on balance, the rise of China is beneficial to the interests of the United States. We have 3 points to support our stance today. First, China's economic rise will shift the economic world order out of our favor. Second, China's rise increases the damage potential from a nation that already perpetuates the worst environmental practices and pollution in the world. And third, the rise will give China too much leverage over the U.S. To begin with our first point, The rise of China spells economic decline for the United States. Currently, a great many U.S. companies are heavily invested in China, either through exporting manufacturing materials to China or by using Chinese labor for production. The U.S. imports an average of $4 in goods from China for every $1 it exports. Our economic relationship with China is a balance, and as China rises, we can see that balance shifting out of our order. According to the New York Times, Chinese demand can significantly pump up or drop down the prices and sales of exports and imports within the American economy, exemplifying the influence China already carries. As China monopolizes on the global market for global labor and production, the United States loses a proportional amount of that market share, and our current trade deficit illustrates that we as a country are growing more economically dependent on China. This unequal relationship starves the U.S.'s potential for increasing our own economic independence and creates a situation where the more China gains, the more the U.S. loses. Our second point, the rise of China represents a direct environmental threat for the U.S. and the world. In 2007, resulting from a fast industrial boom and urbanization, China became the world's biggest greenhouse gas polluter. And each year, pollution causes over 600,000 premature deaths in China. The BBC reports that China does not have policies that limit its greenhouse gas emissions, but instead prefers to cut its amount of carbon output, resulting in a 60% increase in greenhouse gas emissions by 2020. And, more troublingly, airborne pollution, including mercury and lead, is already being carried across the Pacific, where it falls on the U.S. West Coast. As China rises to a superpower, it would undoubtedly be a central part of international decisions about climate change, and its current practices illustrate its disregard for environmental impact. In addition to being the leader in greenhouse gas emissions, China holds looser regulations regarding sustainability. It acts solely in the interest of economic and monetary growth, even at the long-term expense of itself and other countries. And finally, our third point. China and the United States have conflicting interests, and China's rise will foreseeably give it too much power over the U.S. with which to carry out those interests. The ruling Communist Party in China has already shown its willingness to violate its own constitution, which states China consistently adheres to the five principles of mutual respect for sovereignty, including mutual non-aggression and non-interference in each other's internal affairs. However, the National Intelligence Estimate asserts China is actively and aggressively engaging in cyber attacks on American businesses and governmental institutions in sectors including energy, finance, information technology, aerospace, and automotives. This activity is clearly not conducive to the mutual respect and non-interference that China's constitution claims to uphold. If China is not beholden to the values and practices laid down in its own constitution, the increased influence and power that their rise affords them is therefore a conflict to the interests and security of the United States. For these three reasons, my partner and I stand in firm negation of the resolve that, on balance, the rise of China is beneficial to the interests of the United States. Thank you, and with that, I stand down.
That's the first constructive argument from the negative side. If you're just joining us, we're listening to a public forum debate among members of the Sitka High School debate team. Next up is the crossfire section of the debate, and I believe we go over to the affirmative side to begin that, or does the negative side begin that? That's the affirmative.
The first question comes from the team that spoke the longest ago, so we will hear the first question from the affirmative side.
All right. Thank you. So if I may, I'd like to begin this. And I'd like to just get down to the core of this debate. You spoke about some harms that may possibly arise from this growth of China. But I was wondering, without this economic and this social growth, how will these harms improve?
Well, right now, China is focusing on rising economically and politically. This leaves little time for other issues that China doesn't consider quite as important, such as environmental issues, which, as my partner and I have shown, directly affect the United States.
But I believe that you're actually kind of misinterpreting that statistic. What I believe that statistic is referring to is that despite economic growth, they are making efforts to cut back energy emission intensity, but despite their growth, they might be actually increasing their total emissions. But what we see right now is they have a devoted interest to actually lowering their energy efficiency, which comes from this growth.
Right, but this is all that's true. But this is from a country where the government requires, or its goal is to have 8% of its GDP go towards controlling its citizens, which basically means in the communist government, it has little money and time for other issues. So China is much more specific in how it tends in how it intends to rise to a superpower.
Well, I guess that's exactly where we disagree. If you have a question you'd like to ask, yeah. I have another one if you don't.
I have a question for you. So is it true that in a competition such as the world economy, there is a winner and a loser?
Well, this is actually not true. I was expecting that question, and my response is that in an economic game, as you call it, one person becoming victorious does not mean that someone else loses. Can't two people succeed? I mean, what we see right now is that the amount of how interconnected the Chinese and the United States government is that the growth of China's economy will actually promote American economy, as we stated in our first point.
Right, but the Chinese economy is still growing at a different rate and different ways than the U.S. economy is growing, and they have different sectors of industry. And
sure, but you seem to be implying that because they're getting better, we're going to get worse, or we're going to stop getting better.
Right, because,
but
like
where,
I said
where's
before,
the grounds for this claim?
The world economy, like I said before, can be seen as a competition. There simply can't be two countries who have equal amount of strength and power that can symbiotically exist.
But why not? We've already shown you that as this country grows and as our country grows, they are benefiting each other. More specifically, in terms of this debate, the growth of China does benefit the United States.
All right, that was the time up for the first crossfire here in this public forum debate for members of the Sitka High School DDF team. Next is the second constructive argument. We had heard there from Ryan Apathy and Celia Lubin. Kaya Pike now stepping to the microphone, and you can adjust that microphone as you see fit to begin with the second constructive argument.
All righty. Our judge and timer ready? And I'll begin. Hello, my name is Kai Pike. I'll be giving the second speech for our side in today's debate. I'd like to go over our opponent's points and refute them as I can. And if time allows, I will redress our own. So our opponent's first point was that the rise of China would shift the economic world order out of our favor, which, again, was discussed in detail in the crossfire we just heard. And our opponents seem to believe that as one country's economy grows, another country's economy must weaken in order to make room for them, assuming that there are only a finite number of dollars or resources, assuming essentially that this is a zero-sum game. And of course, we see that this is not the case. Our economies are intricately intertwined. China is one of our largest export destinations, as well as one of our largest import destinations. And so we see that as they grow, they will expect more from us. We will export more to them, and they will have more to offer to us, and we will import more from them. And we can see that both sides will benefit, and that the rise of China will benefit the United States economically. Our opponent's second point was that China's essentially their disregard for the environment is a problem. And they talked about how their emission standards aren't very good and about how they're emitting a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. What I would like to point out is that China's emissions affect China just as much as they affect the rest of the planet. And I believe that pretty soon China will realize this. We already see that their environmental standards are improving, as well as their commercial practices that we mentioned in our second point. And that as they rise and as their economy and their government and their society modernizes, essentially, and develops more, they will come to get a handle on this problem. Essentially, they cannot fix this problem until they rise to a point where they are equipped to deal with it. So we can see that these environmental problems are, in fact, not problems at all when we look in the long run. And then finally, our opponent's third point was about how China would gain leverage over the United States as they rose. And I was a little uncertain about this point, because when we think of China rising, we see them incorporating more democratic structures into their government and into their society. We see them becoming, in a way, a little bit more American, more democratic ideals, like we mentioned in our third point. So it is hard to see how they could gain leverage over the United States, a democracy, when China is itself becoming a democracy and becoming more like us and more likely to agree with us. So to go over our 3 points again, we spoke first about how China posed to be an economic benefit to the United States because of the incredible interconnectedness of our economies and our imports and exports. Chinese companies also make major investments in U.S. companies and, in fact, create U.S. jobs, more than 10,000 in just the last 2 years, I believe. So we can see that as China rises, as their economy grows, our economy will certainly grow in tandem. Now, for our second point, that the rise of China will promote better commercial practices around the world. We've seen fewer toy recalls in China as they have grown, as their standards have improved. We can only expect them to improve further as China develops more, as they rise, and as they gain economic strength. So we can see that any problems that China is having can essentially be solved by its growth, its rise. We can see that as they develop, they will, you know, solve their own problems without really any outside interference. And then we can also see that in our third point, as China rises, they will promote democracy and more American ideals. We have seen time and time again that as a nation accepts and adopts a few democratic institutions, the rest of democracy tends to follow. You cannot start this ball rolling without it finishing its course. Thank you.
Kaya Pike with the second constructive argument for the affirmative side. Anne-Marie Pike is up next with the second constructive from the negative side, and she's going to adjust the microphone and jump right into her speech.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Anne-Marie Pike, and I will be addressing my opponent's arguments in this next speech. Now, first I'd like to start with our first point, which states that the rise of China benefits the American economy, and they seem to believe we have some sort of symbiotic relationship with China. However, I'd like to point out that, as we explained in our first point, in economics you definitely do have winners and losers. There is really no such thing in terms of when we're talking about a particular country that has a monopoly on the economic power in the world. There's no such thing as sharing that power. There is certainly an order to the world economics, and there is certainly one country that has a monopoly, and it's currently our country, over the economic influence in the world. And so there's only a largest when we talk about economics, and there's no sort of sharing or symbiosis in this relationship. So if we don't want to give up our status as the largest and most economically influential and lucrative country in the world, we need to see really what the rise of China will mean for us. And what the rise of China economically means is that as they gain, we lose. And as they advance, we are forced to, in essence, decline. And we already see that. We see that when we export and import as greatly as we do to China, and when we rely on them so heavily, we see that any sort of change in demand within China directly fluxes in our own prices and in our own demand in the United States. And so we already see that taking place, and we already see that having effect. And as for their second point, they stated that the rise of China and our investment, our subsequent investment in China, promotes safer and healthier business practices. However, I'd like to really reiterate that China's focus and their interests are very different than ours. And China has already shown for years that they are not concerned about their environmental impact. It is the biggest greenhouse gas polluter in the world and has been for years. And they also state that the rise of China, through industrialization, this will change. However, there's absolutely no guarantee of this, and this is, in fact, very unlikely, because it is through industrialization that China has become the biggest greenhouse gas polluter. So pollution within China is spurred by their rise. And as they have already shown, they are absolutely unconcerned with their environmental impact. Their interests lie in two things. Chinese government's interests lie in two things. One is maintaining control. The Communist Party is heavily invested financially and socially in maintaining control of their people. And second, in growing economically. So nowhere on their agenda do we see sustainability. It acts solely in the interest of economic and monetary growth, even at the long-term expense of itself and others. And also for their third point, they also state something along those lines, that we will help change China. They state that investing in China promotes American ideals, and that the rise of China promotes American ideals in China, and they mention the protests. However, I'd like to quote a man named Wang Xixing. He is a professor at Tsinghua University in China, and he states that social instability and the protests in China likely reflect only internal power struggles in the Chinese Communist Party based on differences of opinion on how to respond to specific instances of unrest, rather than, as he states, a real threat to the authoritarian regime. So basically what we see with that is that social movements within China and protests in China are indicative of nothing more than the government's own response to perceived unrest. And it sort of is indicative of only a lapse in the governmental policy. And so I'd also like to point out that the perpetuating of American ideals within China, it's important to understand that China has an established society and culture and is not wanting of a different one. It is not wanting or susceptible to be changed or attracted to foreign ideals or practices, particularly democracy. And the Chinese are not looking for a new society based on or cooperating with American ideals. And we can't expect to go in and change China. We definitely cannot make that mistake of expecting to go in and change the Chinese people if they neither want nor need to be changed. Thinking with that, I'd like to stand down.
The second constructive argument from the negative side in this public forum debate with members of the Sitka High School DDF team. It's time now for another crossfire.
Our judges and timer ready? Okay, I believe I have the first question.
Mm-hmm.
So you said kind of early on in that last speech that we don't want China to have an economic monopoly on the planet. And then you said that the United States kind of already does and that China would be taking that away from us. Tell me, does the United States have an economic monopoly on the planet?
The United States is the world's largest economy at this point. So I would say that that is good for us considering our economy is the largest in the world.
But we don't necessarily control all trade that happens around the world.
Well, of course not.
And so China is free to trade with us. We're free to trade with them. China is free to trade with the rest of
the
world.
We are free to trade with whoever we choose. However, what I was speaking about was the dependency that we have on China.
And the dependency that they in turn have on us, right?
The dependency that China has on us is not likely to last. As we stated in our, and actually as it is stated in the resolve, through the rise of China, China gains more influence economically. And what we see from that is that if China were ever to gain enough influence over us, that they could sort of influence our foreign policy with that, which is very likely that will happen, then we definitely see a detriment to China having more economic power than it currently does.
I'm sorry, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. You state in your third point that China's rise promotes American ideals. However,
Promotes democracy.
Okay. How is that possible?
Well, what we've seen is that on a local level, many provinces in China have indeed adopted something that looks very much and acts very much and is very much democracy. We're seeing local elections on the city level and on the kind of the provincial level. And what we've seen also in history is that once a nation takes these first baby steps into democracy and starts this ball rolling, the ball continues to roll. Democracy is essentially inevitable in China. And since democracy is an American ideal and we trade better and behave better with democratic nations, we can see that the rise of China leads to democracy, leads to a benefit to the interests of the United States.
Okay, so could I ask you then, because the Communist Party's control over the Chinese social media and over sort of every aspect of Chinese life is so complete and is so weakening, I would say. And there is really no evidence that it is weakening because, as I stated, these protests and social unrest within China only represents sort of an internal power struggle within the Communist Party itself and not a power struggle between the Communist Party and the people. So I would say that the control of China by the Communist Party is absolute. And so I would say that how can you say that democracy is being promoted when absolutely no control is being relinquished to the people at this point?
Because when we look at kind of the anatomy of a revolution, which is actually a very excellent book written in about 1930, we see that there are four stages. The first one is civil unrest, which is what is happening in China, and then an uprising, and then extremist rule, and then finally stability. And the most stable form of government is, of course, democracy, and they are leading towards democracy now.
Thank you.
The second crossfire in this public forum debate that you're listening to on Raven Radio. These are members of the Sitka High School debate team, and they have been in the studio tonight conducting a live public forum debate.